It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 50 degrees. It's been a pretty pleasant day, a few sprinkles. We're looking for a slight chance of rain before 1, then a slight chance of showers after 1. Mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 51. Northeast wind to about 5 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 44, northeast to 5, becoming calm this evening. And it looks like a really nice weekend, partly sunny skies on Friday, Saturday, mostly sunny skies on Sunday. Coming up on the Midday News, the Borough Assembly will be taking public comment on their budget tonight. And Dylan Smard has a report on the Iditarod. Authorities in Metlakatla have reported the community's second death in 8 days due to COVID-19. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Justice Department is investigating Postmaster General Louis DeJoy for possibly violating campaign finance laws. The basis for the probe was first reported in the Washington Post. In a statement, a spokesman says DeJoy, a Trump campaign donor turned appointee, has been open about his conduct. Meanwhile, President Biden is directing federal agencies to step up their anti-corruption efforts. A national security memo released today gives agencies 200 days to re-examine their measures. The White House is out with details on how it plans to donate tens of millions of COVID-19 vaccines to the world. Here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
The White House outlined how the first 25 million U.S. vaccine doses will be shared, with plans to greatly expand as more are produced. 75% will go to COVAX, an international vehicle for getting vaccines to poor countries. The other 25% will go directly to areas the U.S. is prioritizing, including Mexico, Canada, Korea, Iraq, and the West Bank and Gaza, among others. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
The United States is not doing this as some kind of back and forth deal where we're getting something for what we're giving. We are giving these for a single purpose. It is the purpose of ending this pandemic.
Sullivan confirmed that the U.S. will be able to direct where COVAX distributes the doses it gets. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's political rivals have banded together to form a new government and oust him. NPR's Daniel Estrin reports on the upheaval in Israel.
It just feels like a snowball. I mean, one thing after another, just recovering from the COVID pandemic to an 11-day conflict with Hamas, with rockets raining down on Israel, and then Israelis suddenly waking up to this political drama where their prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, who they've been used to for about 12 years in office, may not have a job within a week or two.
NPR's Daniel Estrin in Jerusalem. In Minneapolis, mixed reaction today as crews remove barriers that have been blocking traffic for a year ever since George Floyd died at that spot under the knee of a police officer. Here's Minnesota Public Radio's Tim Nelson.
Heavy equipment moved in about 5 a.m. and started reconfiguring the landmark intersection, establishing a roundabout circling a massive steel fist sculpture. Community activist Steve Floyd led a small group of black men watching the work and said his group, Change Incorporated, had approached the city about reopening the street.
They're going to block off the George Floyd Memorial area where he was murdered. They're also going to do the other side to protect the mural on the wall. They're not removing anything. And exactly, they're going to put bump outs for the restaurants so they can have people out there dining during the summer.
Crowds quickly barricaded the street again and vowed to keep it closed until a long list of demands focusing on racial justice is met. For NPR News, I'm Tim Nelson in Minneapolis.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
The Kodiak Borough Assembly will be taking public comment on the budget at tonight's regular meeting. With $10.5 million already allocated for education support, Under consideration are several draft versions of the multi-million dollar budget presented by the borough manager and different assembly members. At the heart of the budget discussion is funding for nonprofits, as well as Kodiak College, purchasing new assessing software for the IT department, and to what extent the mill rate, or property taxes, may have to be increased. The manager's budget does not include nonprofit and college funding, but fully funds borough departments at over $6 million, including an additional $300,000 for new assessing software. This budget may require a small increase to property taxes. A proposal presented by Assemblymembers Jeff Smith and Dwayne Dvorak fully funds the borough departments, but does not include money for assessing software, and in fact moves that money to fund health and social services nonprofits. But their proposed budget is higher at over $7.5 million, which will likely warrant a more substantial mill rate increase. The third budget version was put together by Assemblymembers Scott Arndt, James Turner, and Amy Williams. Their budget makes several across-the-board cuts in order to fund nonprofits at $170,000 and appropriate $100,000 to Kodiak College. This is the only proposed budget that avoids a property tax increase. The borough has until June 10th to finalize their budget. You can listen to the borough assembly's discussion of the different proposed budgets tonight on KMXT here on 100.1 FM at 6:30 p.m. Kodiak was host to an annual event last weekend involving motorsports, community, and no small amount of mud. From the Iditarod Challenge 2021, KMXT's Dylan Simard brings us this audio postcard.
Last weekend in Kodiak, an incredible event took place which brought a community together around shared passions. No, I'm not talking about Crabfest, although that does fit the description. I'm talking about the Kodiak Iditarod Challenge. 30 miles out of town, on Saturday morning, riders of side-by-sides, ATVs, dirt bikes, and two extraordinarily brave runners set out to complete a 34-mile circuit through some of the most inhospitable terrain on Kodiak. Some participants described the weather as being the wettest they had ever seen for an Iditarod, not a small claim on Kodiak. The first riders had impressive times of around 1 hour and 45 minutes, which would be considered a good time even in fair weather. The dirt bike riders came from the trail sopping wet, caked in mud, and completely out of breath. A pair of riders pull in, with one struggling to pull his bike out of a hole hidden under at least 2 feet of water. When he finally arrives at the finish, he flips the bike over to fix obvious damage to the underside of the fuselage. When he does, water flows out of the tailpipe, gas trickles from the tank, and steam wafts from the engine. A few onlookers laugh and take steps back, especially those who are smoking lit backwoods cigarillos.
I just turned that tree around and Jay was like, "What are you thinking?" And I just...
The onlookers seem to be impervious to the cold wind, the unrelenting rain, and the hours anxiously awaiting their friends and loved ones' return from the harsh trail. They gather around wood pallet fires and enjoy soft drinks and music wafting from nearby car speakers. The mood is good and spirits are high.
I can see by the look on your face you are not pumped.
I was like, they're already...
I interviewed one of the dirt bike riders, the one who didn't suffer damage to his bike. Anthony Jewin looks like he went swimming in his dirt bike clothes. His helmet hasn't shielded his face completely from mud. When he unzips his motorcycle jacket, the shirt underneath inexplicably has mud on it too. He's exhausted, but the high from the day's ride keeps him on his feet.
What are the conditions like?
It was wet. It was... Like the mud was pretty bad. I think that's our hardest part was the mud.
I leave him to trade stories with his friends, and the mood instantly is one of revelry. Friends boast to friends about their trials on the trail, and stories range from injuries sustained to overtaking other riders to ending up soaking wet in a ditch. They glow in one another's recognition. For them, life is good. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
We had this mud hole like right before Lefty Lake, and I swamped the bike and overheated, and it was hard. We had to like pick
people. Authorities in Metlakatla reported the community's third COVID-19 related death Tuesday evening. They did not identify the victim. It's Metlakatla's second COVID-19 death reported in 8 days. The state's sole Alaska Native Reserve has reported 47 coronavirus cases. That means roughly 6% of Metlakatla residents diagnosed with COVID-19 have died. In recent weeks, Metlakatla has reckoned with its largest ever COVID-19 outbreak, but new cases appear to be slowing. Local officials reported 5 new cases last week and added another Wednesday. As of Wednesday's evening update, 7 people remained infected with the disease. That's down from a record high of 21 set last month. Ketchikan-based state public health nurse Arizona Jacobs said last week that the scourge of cases in Metlakatla is likely linked to a record-breaking rise in cases in Ketchikan. A wrestling tournament hosted at Ketchikan High School in mid-April led to cases of COVID-19 across southeast Alaska. Jacobs said a pool tournament spread across several Ketchikan bars the following weekend was associated with, quote, far more, unquote, cases than the wrestling event, though she did not provide specific figures. Jacobs says that's likely how the virus made it to Metlakatla early last month.
This person, I believe, attended both the wrestling tournament and the pool tournament.
Because COVID-19 symptoms can take as long as 2 weeks to develop, it's hard to say exactly where and when an infected person caught the coronavirus, but Jacobs said the pool tournament is the most likely source. Local officials in Metlakatla have banned most gatherings since the outbreak began in early May and continue to urge residents to get vaccinated against COVID-19. A group of 12 mountaineers were rescued Tuesday from a glacier in Wrangell-St. Elias National Park by the Alaska Air and Army National Guard. KUAC's Dan Bros has this report.
Alaska Rescue Coordination Center Director Lieutenant Colonel Keenan Zirkel says the St. Elias Guides climbing party initially called for help Saturday, reporting 2 suffering altitude sickness. Lieutenant Colonel Zirkel says the party had abandoned their ascent of 16,000-foot Mount Bona and hunkered down at about 10,000 feet in bad weather.
Continuous snowfall, high winds, you know, all the conditions conducive to hypothermia and everything else.
Zirkel says the extreme conditions thwarted repeated efforts to reach the climbers until late Tuesday when a high-altitude Chinook helicopter team was able to make it in.
The winds died down enough that they thought an attempt was possible, so they took off and were able to get in and pick up all 12 individuals in one lift.
Zirkel says 3 of the climbers had minor injuries, including one with frostbite.
It became a issue of get them out of there now before there are serious injuries that will develop. So, you know, a little bit of preventative medicine, I guess, if you want to think of it like that.
Zirkel says the 3 injured were transported onto Anchorage for care and that the other climbers were dropped off in McCarthy. He describes a drawn-out rescue operation that included 80 hours of flight time involving Air and Army National Guard planes, helicopters, and crews, supported by the National Park Service, local businesses, and individuals. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The number of incarcerated Alaskans released on discretionary parole has declined dramatically in the last 5 years. In 2016, 64% of applicants were granted parole. In 2020, that number fell to just 16%. That's according to data recently released by the Alaska Parole Board. Jeff Edwards, the director of the board, says that despite the pandemic, everyone who was eligible for parole was given the opportunity to apply. He says a criminal justice reform bill that passed in 2016 required the parole board to grant parole in certain cases, but a new law, which went into effect in the middle of 2019, gives more discretion to the board. He says that may have contributed to the low rate of approved parole applications.
There was a legal requirement in some cases where if inmates met those requirements that the board shall grant discretionary parole. And that has since been changed under HB 49 that the board may grant it. The difference between shall and may in legal terms is quite significant.
Edwards said the pandemic-related cancellation of in-person rehabilitation programming, which is often a requirement for incarcerated people to be granted parole, could also be a factor in the lower rates.
The department did the best they could. I mean, they tried different avenues and frequencies to make sure that the programs were up and running, but that was one of the questions and discussions came up quite often about the availability of programming.
Advocates are concerned that there are other reasons that the rate of granting people parole dropped so sharply last year. Megan Edge, a spokesperson for the ACLU of Alaska, says data shows that the current board, chaired by the mother of a murder victim, has voted more to deny people up for parole, which keeps people in prison longer. She says it's part of a misguided idea about harsh sentences for crimes that have been disproved by researchers.
Longer sentences do not make us safer. Mass incarceration does not equal public safety. We need to be rehabilitating people, correcting behavior, and releasing them when they have a chance.
She also points to lack of transparency about the board's decision-making that raises questions about equity. Data shows that white people who are incarcerated were about twice as likely as Alaskan Natives or American Indian people to be granted discretionary parole. That disparity is even higher for Asians and Pacific Islanders. Edge says that while other factors could account for the disparity, like the severity of the crime, the board doesn't release enough information to know for sure.
We need a lot more information to really understand what's happening in closed-door parole hearings.
Edwards, the director of the parole board, says that if there are biases in the parole board's decision-making, legislative auditors can review the individual case files. Park Service rangers killed a black bear near Exit Glacier in Seward yesterday after hearing reports of an aggressive bear. Kenai Fjords park officials responded quickly, according to Laura Sturtz, who directs education at the park. Along with a team that included members of the local fire department and the Alaska State Troopers, rangers headed up the trail armed with bear spray and guns.
About a mile and a half up the Harding Ice Field Trail, the park's law enforcement officers encountered a large black bear that was aggressive and refusing to give way on the trail.
They hazed the bear, but it continued to act aggressively, so they shot and killed it. The team continued up the trail and found the hikers that had been reported injured.
Eventually found two uninjured hikers that were waiting to be escorted down the trail. They had had an interaction, but were not injured in that interaction.
The bear's carcass was donated to charity so that its meat could be salvaged. Sturt says the park couldn't find any records of aggressive bears being killed in Kenai Fjords Park before. It's the second bear killed on Seward trails this year. State park rangers killed a black bear in the Tonsina Point Trail in May after hikers reported it had acted aggressively towards them. A news report says that Hilcorp Energy emits far more methane into the atmosphere than any other oil and gas producer in the United States. Texas-based Hilcorp is Alaska's second largest oil producer. Nationally, it produces far less energy than ExxonMobil, but Hilcorp emits nearly 50% more methane pollution, according to the report. It was produced by consulting firm M.J. Bradley for two nonprofits. Methane is the primary ingredient in natural gas. It is emitted from cracked equipment, bad seals, and when liquids are transferred, among other ways. Methane is also a powerful contributor to global warming. It's 25% more potent than carbon dioxide in trapping heat in the atmosphere. The report shows little methane escaping from Arctic Alaska, where most of the state's oil production is located. Gas there is reinjected into wells. A leaking Cook Inlet pipeline contributed to Hilcorp's high methane escapement, but Hilcorp's larger methane problems are in the lower 48, according to public data sources M.J. Bradley relied on. A Hilcorp spokesman said by email that the report's conclusions are meant to advance the agenda of the groups that sponsored it, namely the Clean Air Task Force and another climate advocacy organization called Ceres. The spokesman said Hilcorp buys aging assets and improves them, but he says the emissions data does not give the company full credit for those improvements. He also says that nearly all of Hilcorp Alaska's facilities have decreased emissions since coming under our ownership.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. No progress in getting mask mandates repealed for fishing crews. More after this.
Did you know that the Alaska Seafood brand tops all others on menus across the nation? Learn more about the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute at alaskaseafood.org.
As salmon fisheries open across Alaska, the federal mask mandate remains in effect to prevent the spread of COVID. And despite pushback with the Center for Disease Control by Alaska's policymakers, the rule still stands. Senator Dan Sullivan in March.
Senator Murkowski and I have been pressing this relentlessly. I had a call with the Coast Guard Commandant, a call with the White House guy who's supposedly in charge of all the CDC issues. We had a meeting with the head of the CDC. We are trying to explain to them, you know, no offense, but just how stupid this is and how uninformed it is, and really could be a safety issue.
The CDC has included fishing vessels with all other forms of public transportation. And while it relaxed the rules for fully vaccinated people, fishing crews are not included. Bristol Bay fisherman Joe Trotter says his crew is vaccinated. He told KDLG in Dillingham the mask requirement is ridiculous.
If you go into shore, or you go into Dillingham, you go into Naknek, whatever, you go on land somewhere, yeah, okay. But requiring us to have a mask on our fishing boat while we're fishing, no, that's ridiculous. It's a safety issue, if nothing else.
Trotter said it's critical while fishing on a noisy boat to read lips or facial expressions. At a May Senate hearing, Senator Lisa Murkowski also expressed safety concerns.
You're out on a boat. The winds are howling. Your mask is soggy wet. Tell me how anybody thinks that this is a sane and a sound policy.
Last week, Murkowski co-wrote a letter to the CDC and Coast Guard asking them to exempt fishermen from the mask requirement. Meanwhile, the rule remains, and not wearing masks could mean restricted access to ports and operations, along with civil or criminal penalties. The Coast Guard told KDLG last week they will be checking for compliance. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the third day of June, the year 2021. Sun rose today at 5:16. It will set again at 11:01, giving us 17 hours and 46 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 2 minutes and 27 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 33, set in 1973 and 2007, and our record high was 73, set in 1980. Currently 50 degrees, pretty pleasant out there. We're looking for just a slight chance of showers after 2 p.m., mostly cloudy skies this afternoon, with a high hoping to reach 51. Northeast wind to 5 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly cloudy skies, low about 44, northeast to 5, becoming calm this evening. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies, high near 58, calm winds. Saturday, partly sunny, high near 59, west winds to 15. And for Sunday, mostly sunny skies, high near 57 on Sunday. I won't tell you about the rest of the week. Currently looking at an outgoing tide. The next low tide will be at 3:51 p.m. here on the east side, a 1-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:39 p.m. of 7.1 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5 a.m. here on the east side and be 2 feet. And your high tide for later in the morning on the east side will be at 10:44 a.m. and be 5.8 feet. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 4:29 p.m. of 2.5 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:59 p.m. of 12.5 feet. Your next low tide will be at 5:28 a.m. of 3 feet, and your high tide on the west side at 11:21 a.m. will be 10.6 feet. Mariners, here's your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A 999 millibar low, 140 nautical miles south of Middleton Island, and its front over the northern Gulf will dissipate this morning. A stronger 935 millibar low, 390 nautical miles south of Chignik, will move into the eastern Gulf Friday and go to 995 millibars. Your resulting weather. Kodiak's east side offshore, Marmot Island to Sitkanak, small craft advisory for Friday. Variable 10 right now, becoming northeast 10 this afternoon, seas to 4 feet. For Friday, look for west winds to 15 knots, increasing to 20 knots Friday night, seas building to 9 feet. And for Saturday, look for west wind to 30 knots, seas to 7 feet. Saturday through Sunday, Kodiak's east side offshore. Over in the Shelikof Strait, variable 10 right now, becoming northeast in the afternoon, seas to 3 feet. For Friday, look for southwest 15, seas to 4 feet. And for Saturday through Monday, west wind to 25 knots, seas to 6 feet in the Shelikof. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. Chiniak Bay, variable less than 10 right now, becoming northeast 10 this afternoon. For tomorrow, variable wind less than 10, seas to 3 feet. Sunday through Monday, west 15, seas 2 feet. For Marmot Bay, variable less than 10 right now, seas to 3 feet. For tomorrow, variable less than 10, seas to 2 feet. Saturday through Monday, west wind to 20 knots, seas to 4 feet. Well, I think I have a personal message here. Patrick wants a puppy. He's looking to provide responsible ownership and give a great home to a new canine family member. A perfect fit would be a female, maybe just past housebroken would be nice, and a lab or shepherd mix. Call or text Patrick at 907-654-4486. That's 654-4486 if you can help him out. And thanks very much for your help. Always check the Humane Society. The Borough Assembly will be meeting for a regular meeting tonight to discuss the FY 2022 budget. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. at the Bayside Fire Hall. And, of course, that will be broadcast here on KMXT on 100.1 FM. And it's also being streamed live at the www.kodiakak.us. A public hearing will be held on the budget for community input. Comments can also be emailed to clerks@kodiakak.us. They wanted that by noon today, or they may be given during the meeting, either in person at the Bayside Fire Hall or over the phone at this number, 486-3231. You can also call toll-free at 855-492-9202. Also today, that's the same meeting. Well, the Kodiak Public Library Association's After Crab Fest book sale has been extended to 3 o'clock today. And there still were a few good books left. And all you have to do is pay $5, fill the bag completely up with the books. There were some great novels left still there. Good summer reading stuff. Again, that's till 3 today in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. If you're missing live music, the Kodiak Arts Council and Lucky Pierre Productions are bringing back the Alaska Bluegrass Band Blackwater Railroad Company. They're coming to the fairgrounds on Saturday, July 5th. The show starts at 6:30 p.m. with Frank Sullivan, also Jillian Lee, followed by Ellamy Tiller and the Twang, and, of course, Blackwater Railroad Company. Doors open at 6 p.m. at the fairgrounds. Again, that's this coming Saturday. Bring your camp chair. Enjoy some food from the Kodiak Lions. And you can get your tickets for this event at kodiakarts.org. That's one word, kodiakarts.org. And I've been assured there will be a beer garden there. Well, Canna, Alaska Sea Grant, and the Shunack Tribe of Kodiak are strongly advising against eating personally harvested shellfish in the Kodiak region at this time. They're currently seeing elevated levels of toxins. Paralytic shellfish poisoning toxins increase dramatically in the summer months and remain through fall in the Kodiak region. This is due to the naturally occurring toxic phytoplankton that bloom in warm water. All bivalve shellfish, clams, cockles, and mussels, as well as predatory snails and the digestive tissues of crab, can accumulate PSP toxins. People are at risk from eating personally harvested, untested shellfish. Remember, commercially harvested shellfish is regulated and safe for consumption. If you feel any kind of symptoms after eating untested shellfish, this would include tingling, numbness, and nausea, call 911 immediately or go to your local health clinic. For more information, call Grace at 486-1360 or Julie at 486-1514.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.